You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
4 decades ago, in the midst of the U.S. war against the people of Vietnam, Martin Luther King wrote, "A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death." In 2008, our federal government put forward a document setting its military priorities for the next 20 years. Titled the Canada First Defense Strategy, the focus was on combat readiness, more personnel, more equipment, greater interoperability with the U.S., more partnerships among military, corporation, and academia, and underpinning it all, increased spending. With tens of billions of dollars now allocated to the purchase of fighter jets and the construction of naval combat vessels, this government has put its words into practice. Joining me in the studio to discuss the rapidly growing militarization of Canada is Roger Annis. Roger is an anti-war activist with Stop War in Vancouver, and he is also a leading activist in the Canada-Haiti Action Network. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning.
The end of the Cold War was heralded as introducing an era of peace, and instead we've had war after war. How does military spending compare between the Cold War and now?
Well, it's going up exponentially. We're now at an annual rate of military spending of somewhere in the order of $20 billion. That's double the figures from the end of the Cold War period. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives estimates that Canada has spent or will spend $23 billion on its military forces in the current fiscal year 2010-2011. So that's 26% higher than in fiscal year 1989. And the figures in the years going forward are just growing exponentially, according to the projection that you explained there from the federal government. So yeah, it's going up fast, and the rate is increasing even.
Who's making the money from these huge expenditures?
Well, these are the military contractors, the shipbuilders, the aircraft builders, the supplier of weapons, the designers. It's a major industry in Canada. And, of course, it's part of an international industry, and much of what Canada's purchasing, especially in the areas of weapons control systems, are U.S. companies. Right now, Lockheed Martin is quite a substantial presence, for example, in the province of Nova Scotia, where it already, prior to this latest announcement of the shipbuilding program, had a substantial contract to rearm the existing Canadian destroyers and frigates.
Now, I just know that both ends of the country, Halifax on the east and Vancouver here on the west, are centers where this investment is being made and ships are being built. And I understand that the media report that the contracts in Halifax shipyards are for combat vessels, but the contracts in Vancouver are not for combat, as though they're not related to war. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that the claim for the West Coast is only partially true, because part of the work here will be to build two or three naval supply ships. So these are combat vessels. They carry the armaments, or they supply the personnel on board the ships. The other part of the contract here is the construction of Coast Guard vessels and also an icebreaker, that is a major Arctic icebreaker. And yes, you could make the argument that these are not directly combat-related, but I don't really accept that. For one, the government has said some time ago that it's going to beef up its Coast Guard presence in order to stem the flow of refugees who are coming to Canada from war zones or from areas that are suffering environmental distress. We know that there is a big militarization of the North going on. There is now competition going on as to who is going to control the Arctic zone. Canada has staked its claim. It has said we're going to increase our military presence in the North in order to enforce this claim. There's also other big changes that are happening in the far North. The ice is melting, sadly, due to the environmental change that we're suffering. And so that means that there is increased probability of commercial shipping through the north, and also of oil and gas exploration and eventual exploitation. And so I think that the Arctic patrol ships that are to be built and are projected in this, to me, this figures into an overall military picture of Canada, first of all asserting its control over what is an internationally disputed area, and then backing up that control with weaponry and the threat to use it.
Now, I understand, Roger, you were on the East Coast recently, sort of end of September. What's been the union response there to this investment in shipbuilding and military spending?
Well, I think across the board, the response to the warship program has been very distressing. Politically, in the House of Commons, there is all-party support for the warship announcement. This is different than the response to the untendered contract that was announced by the federal government for the F-35 aircraft last year. There is very differing points of view on this aircraft program among some of the federal parties, not necessarily an anti-war view, but at least some discussion and debate. The warship has received what seems near universal acceptance, including among the unions who organize the workers who will be building these warships. And it's certainly the argument of the Halifax Peace Coalition and anti-war activists across the country that there are socially necessary uses to which this funding should be put. And so the article that Tamara Lawrence of the Halifax Peace Coalition published in the Halifax Chronicle Herald, I think, sums up well what should be done. The headline of the article was "Sink the Ships." I like that. I talked to her about this issue while I was down there in Halifax. And sadly, at this point in time, our union movement is not rallying around the call and the perspective for alternative spending for this kind of what I think is clearly a very socially wasteful and destructive spending on warships.
And what about provincial governments? How have they responded?
Well, they're a part of the universal acclamation of the warship program. The government in Nova Scotia is an NDP government, and one would expect to see that the government there would actually be trying to apply what are the policies of the party, at least on paper. That is, we need socially necessary spending to be happening in Canada, and that military spending is, well, they won't put words in the mouth of the NDP. They won't say that all military spending should cease, but there's some will there to question this. But the Nova Scotia government, the Nova Scotia NDP government, has been in the forefront of lobbying for, campaigning for, pressing for this warship spending, just as it welcomed the spending on the aircraft. So it's a pro-war, pro-military government in the province of Nova Scotia, and it's the same picture here in British Columbia. The provincial government here provided $40 million of subsidy to the bid to get the part of the warship program, or let's say the combined warship Coast Guard program, spent here in British Columbia. And even a Crown corporation, BC Ferries, has contributed $20 million towards the shipyard that eventually won the contract. So it's a troubling tale on both coasts.
Do many people see the billions of dollars being spent and say it's great, it's creating jobs, and the impressions being left that this is the only way to create jobs? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think that's very mistaken. For one, on simply at the level of job creation, there are far greater possibilities for job creation that's dedicated to social spending, or let's say to the necessary spending that we need to begin to forestall the warming of the climate with all the consequences there, than there ever would be for military spending. I like the quotation that Tamara Lawrence put in the Halifax newspaper, and I'll quote one short paragraph from her commentary in the Halifax Chronicle Herald on September 10th. She writes, "Do we really want our next generation workforce building warships and naval combat systems? Imagine instead our young people proudly employed retrofitting homes, installing clean energy technologies, expanding public transportation, upgrading wastewater treatment systems, running organic farms, and restoring polluted rivers. I think she really hit the nail on the head with that paragraph.
What do you think it's going to take to make people kind of see this situation for what it is?
Well, I think the anti-war movement now has a big job ahead of us. We've clearly lost some ground, I think, in the consciousness of why military spending is socially harmful and destructive, not only to Canada, but of course to the people who end up receiving the bombs that are loaded on these warships and aircraft. So we have, I think, a big educational job ahead of us now, and I was very pleased to, as a delegate at the recent Canadian Peace Alliance convention in Toronto, the Peace Alliance is unrolling now a comprehensive program to fight against the notion that military spending is somehow beneficial to the country. And so a lot of our listeners will be hearing about that program in the weeks and months ahead, and we will get organized in coalitions like StopWar.ca here in Vancouver to go out now and conduct a basic education campaign amongst Canadians, but in particular among the constituencies that have the most interest in opposing military spending programs and instead seeing the necessary social spending programs roll out, including and above all trade unions. And so that's what we're going to be doing in the weeks and months ahead, and that's the alternative to this to the madness of this military spending.
Well, I really appreciate your coming in and talking to us about this morning, Roger.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks a lot. I've been speaking with Roger Annis. Roger is an anti-war activist with Stop War in Vancouver, and he's also a leading activist in the Canada-Haiti Action Network.